20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. I'm Adam, and with me is Kirby, because Alicia's not available.
I'm an Alicia substitute.
Yes, so you have to act with a bit of attitude and say, sorry, what are you talking about? And stuff like that for a little while.
What are you talking about? This thing called Doctor Who, I think.
Yeah, I haven't actually quite decided yet what we're going to talk about. But thanks for joining me for the first bit of the show anyway, Kirby. It's lovely to have a substitute. Especially a substitute that's actually going to be interested in the subject matter of the podcast.
Yeah, I asked my girls yesterday if any of them wanted to be on, and they all went, no, I don't want to be heard on the podcast.
Fools. I'm sure she'll run. I got a very small snippet of Isabella later on, because she, when the Comic Relief thing was on Friday night, she was in bed watching it, and I sort of quickly got grabbed and recorded her a dire dinner and sort of asked her what she thought of it. So I've got a little bit of snippet of Isabella later on in the show, so that'll satisfy the listeners that only tune in to listen to my children.
I love the Isabella segments. They're just so much fun. I remember when my girls were all that little.
Yeah. But I say we've had a bit of a busy week on this one. I'm hoping she'll be back for next week, especially, in a couple of weeks' time. We've got the 50th episode, so I'd be quite disappointed if she's not around for that. So, fingers crossed.
I end up dragging all three of the girls separately in to watch Space and Time, all of them loved it.
Yeah.
But it took me about 18 hours after it was on before I was able to get my 13-year-old to come and watch it. And she kept going, I've already seen it. I said, no, you have not seen this. Absolutely brand spanking new. Once she got upstairs, she loved it. We all loved it. I was a bit miffed because of your standard Stephen Moffat wibbly wobbly, timey wimey. The doctor tells himself what to do, but other than that, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was certainly the best so far of these little mini episodes they've done over the years for Comic Relief and Children in Need. I think it is anyway. Obviously, the one with Peter Davison in Time Crash, wasn't it? Which was good fun.
Right.
But as a little package story, I thought it was probably the best of the few. Curse of Federal Death was a spoof comedy. And I've probably still got the title wrong. Dimensions in Time was a bit of a joke. Nice to see all those characters and actors together. Just such a shame it was such a poor production at the end of it. On the whole, I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it was sort of, it obviously was a comedy, but it had a sort of serious Doctor Who story element to it, so it wasn't complete, like I said, on misspelt canon on Facebook. I will still consider
that.
I've got a problem with N. It does, I can either type 3 or 4 N's or none at all. That's my excuse anyway. That's what I'm sticking to.
I didn't see any reason that it would not be canon.
No.
To me, Dimensions in Time is not canon, but it was obviously canon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was, obviously. I mean, it's Dimensions in Time. Not, obviously, The Curse of Fatal Death, is that the correct title now? Is not.
The Curse of Fatal Death is not.
But I'm sure some fans will better work some sort of timey-wimey thing to turn it into canon, like they do with the Doctor Who movies and other strange things, like the Doctor being half-human in the Doctor Who TV movie. They always work a way around these things to try and make things fit.
Yeah, we were watching a video over the weekend, something on Vimeo, Doctor Who History, 1963 to 2010, that has a little segment of Curse of Fatal Death in it. Not until about 30 minutes in, when they're showing all the other extra things, and all of the girls, when the Curse of Fatal Death comes up, they see that and they go, I love that!
It is good. I mean, it's really great fun. Obviously, that's also written by Stephen Moffat. It's a brilliant piece of work, but obviously it can't be considered as being canon.
One of them goes, Mr. Bean!
Yeah, he would have made a good Doctor if he could have played the part seriously, obviously. There's a few of them there would have made good Doctors. Hugh Grant springs to mind, who would have been a particularly good Doctor there. Not too sure about Joanna Lumley, but... watched that picture at a later time. You can actually download that on iTunes, the Curse of Fatal Death. I made it available to raise money for comic relief, which is really good, because my copy of it's a bit ropey old VHS. And the funny thing is, I've been trying to find it on my phone, on my iPod and my phone. I'm going to have to look online with my computer to actually find the actual thing I'm looking for, because there's quite a lot of things on there. I did download the Time and Space for my iPhone and iPod, having already recorded it off the telly. I'm going to dump it on the DVD, but it seems to be a bit of a waste of a DVD. It was only like 6 minutes of a DVD, but I'm sure they'll stick it on one of the probably the box set. That's what they did with the previous specials, didn't they? They stuck them on the box set. So we're going to be reviewing, I'll come back to what we're talking about later, we're going to be reviewing Terror of the Zygons later on when Ben's on the show. Obviously, that's going to be a thorough review of it. Did you watch Terror of the Zygons over the last few days?
I have not seen Terror of the Zygons since it's on PBS so many years ago. I don't want to even try to remember how many years ago. Obviously, I made the mention last week that I saw the picture of the Zygons before I ever saw any Doctor Who whatsoever, and I was a bit taken aback because it was just so strange looking. But I do remember when I saw it, I enjoyed the story.
Yeah, I mean, I had to watch it in concentrated form the last night and this morning, because I just couldn't find the time to watch it other than right at the last minute this week, which I don't like doing. But it's not the best, it's not the worst. I was trying to find things, because I like to spoof things a little bit, just take the mickey out the sort of things that you might pick up as being a little bit funny, but I'm sure Ben will be able to provide some comedy on that particular aspect. But I was really scraping the ground to find things that weren't supposed to be funny that were, because obviously there are bits in there that the interaction between Tom Baker's doctor and Nick Courtney's brigadier was really, really good. It's such a shame that we only got two stories of them two together, because there was certainly a rapport between them two.
Oh yeah. Didn't the Zygons have this very strange, weird, whispery voice?
That is one of the things I picked up on, yes.
Oh, yes, okay. But remember, it's so many years since I've seen it. Right now, I'm trying to catch up on The Key to Time.
Yeah.
It's taking a while to get funds together, too.
Yeah, The Key to Time does contain my second favourite Doctor Who story of all time. What's the first? No, my favourite Doctor Who story. Well, classic series, which is Pirate Planet.
I love it. That was one I got about a month and a half ago, and I just got Sons of Blood. Haven't watched it yet. That's one I haven't seen since the old days as well. Mm. I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in that series. I mean, obviously you got I don't like Power of Kroll very much, I must admit, but the one where they go, there's all the sword fighting, what's that one called? With the Androids of Tara, there we go. I should have thought of the Androids, that was spurred me into action, and that's a really good one. It's just that's generally considered to be quite a good series, that one. And also, I'm a big fan of the Bigger on the Inside podcast, and when Michael Sims, who had watched that to review it, he watched it for the first time, absolutely loved the Reboss operation, and he was singing its praise, and he said, "This is my new favourite story," he was saying. Bearing in mind, he's obviously watched each Doctor Who story right from the beginning to cover on his show, and there's been quite a lot of good stuff up to that point, and he picked out that one as replacing the one set in Victorian times with Yeager and Lightfoot. I really haven't got my brain on
that. Talons of Wind Chiang.
See, that was just a quiz. I was just testing. Talons of Wind Chiang. That was his previous favourite one. So he says that Reboss Operation is currently his favourite. So they've just finished doing the Key to Time season. I've downloaded their most recent episode, and they're moving on to season 17, I think, which is the one after
and
that.
There you go again, bringing up a podcast I have not listen
Bigger on the Inside, yes. It's one of my favourite podcasts. It's one I would, if you had to delete a load of podcasts, that wouldn't be on my deletion list, because it's just got, for me, I want to give it a plug, because I know they're below us in the charts. And I won't worry them, but it's him and Dan Toland, Michael Sims, Dan Toland, and they have, right the way from the beginning, they've watched every Doctor Who story in order. Dan Tolan's a long-time Doctor Who fan. Michael Sims is a sci-fi fan who's sort of a bit familiar with the new series but wanted to go back and look at afresh to all these classic stories without any spoilers. And they've been doing two episodes a fortnight ever since then. As I say, in that time they've just got up to the end of this Key to Time season. So really good podcast, very intelligent, lovely fellas, and I think they're from Chicago, funny enough.
Well, as soon as we get off, I'll go out there and download.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, obviously, I have a weekly show. It's a bit difficult because it's quite long. Their show is generally about an hour long, and they cover two episodes per week. And it'll be a bit of a shame when they get to the end, really, because I don't know if they're going to carry on the podcast when they actually get to the end. I know there's a lot of time to go between now and then, but I'd miss not hearing their dulcet tones. In fact, Alicia, when they started out their podcast, there used to be like a explicit tag on their podcast. And me and Alicia sent in some feedback to sort of say, well, we like your podcast, but Alicia doesn't like the swearing. Ever since then, they haven't sworn on the podcast, which is really, really good. So we've had an impact on them. But yeah, good show, that. Big on the inside. Well worth a listen, listeners. But of course, if you've only can listen to one podcast, you'll have to be ours. Yes, now we've had a little bit of Doctor Who news that I thought was quite interesting. Obviously, we've had the passing of Michael Gough. Who was a couple of connections with Doctor Who. One is he was the Celestial Toymaker, and he was also the baddie in the Ark of Infinity, and he played the butler in the first Batman film. The name of the butler.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I knew about the Celestial Toymaker, and I was pointing that out to the girl over the weekend. I didn't remember he was the butler.
He was indeed, and he was also married to Annika Wills in the 60s, had some children with Annika before his womanising ways, I think, ended up splitting them up as a couple, but I know they always remained really good friends throughout their time. So that's a sad loss to, because he was 91 years old, but it's always sad when a big character like that departs this world. So thoughts go out to his family and obviously Annika, because obviously she's still going to have a lot of feelings for him, and it's a very sad time. Obviously, we've lost Nick now, we've lost him. So, also, Matt Smith has been confirmed for season 7, so with the 2012 series, which is fantastic news, because it was always nice to get them. I think 3 series at least, it's nice to have as an actor playing the Doctor. Hopefully a 4th for him, because obviously the series after that would be the anniversary series, so you'd think that he might be itching to be available for that, and I've always thought they're going to keep him there and have the big finale 50th anniversary story would be the regeneration. So that's only surmising, but I predicted it here, so we'll come.
that sounds like it would be really great.
It would be. I hope that's why I'm going. I can't see him playing it more than. Yeah, no. I think he'd probably think of himself, if he does do that 2013 series and it's an anniversary, it's got to be a big thing for an anniversary special. The biggest you can do would be a regeneration, so I think that's probably what they're perhaps aiming for. And, of course, the River Song story arc will still be involved there somewhere. Obviously, we're going to find out who she is in the up-and-coming series, but obviously there'll be other adventures to see along the line that will involve her. I've got some news from the Mail on Sunday, which I'll read with Ben later. That's the news that I've actually written down in my notes. There is other news that's become available on the Doctor Who News page that I always use, which is www.doctorwhonews.net. Michael Sheen. That's what sort of flashed out at me when it... Because I always thought Michael Sheen would make a really good Doctor. But he's going to be in Doctor Who. But he's going to be a voice character in it. But that's brilliant, because what a fantastic actor he is. Yes, as it says in this note, it says, film star Michael Sheen is to voice a character in the 4th episode of the upcoming series of Doctor Who. Sheen revealed his involvement during a talk to students at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama. And this was confirmed later by writer Neil Gaiman, who penned the story that will feature the vocal talents of the actor. Sheen is best known for his movie portrayals of well-known public figures. He played former British Prime Minister Tony Blair in The Queen, TV interviewer David Frost in Frost Nixon, and former football manager Brian Clough in The Damned United. So, great news, because, I mean, it would have been better if he's never going to play the Doctor, is he? Because he's a big international film star. So, but it's lovely that they can still draw people of his calibre in to play, just a vocal part in a normal little TV series like Doctor Who. If you're looking back last year, we had Bill Nighy appearing uncredited.
Yeah.
We had Timothy Dalton and Brian Cox. So it's lovely they can get these people to come in and play parts.
I'm looking at his filmography right now, and unfortunately the only thing I have seen him, or actually heard him in, is the Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, he's in that as well. I wasn't even aware he was in Alice in Wonderland.
He was the White Rabbit.
Oh, he was it? Oh, excellent. I didn't know that. Thing I remember he was in, he played Kenneth Williams. He did a brilliant, he didn't really do an impression of him, but he played a very believable Kenneth Williams in the Kenneth Williams Diaries, the dramatisation of that. Yeah, so I think that's the first thing I actually remember seeing him in, actually. He's very good at characterising people, the well-known figures, basically. He does a really, really cool. He doesn't, like I say, he doesn't do an impression, but he does enough, he captures their character enough that you believe that they are him. You know, really, really good. Great actor. I did see on Comic Relief that Matt Smith played the Doctor in a quick cameo on stage with Jonathan Ross on that.
We watched that one as well.
Mm. So, I mean, is it available to download in America, or is it a case of get watching it on YouTube or what?
This was a YouTube.
It was, yeah.
I didn't check if it could be downloaded.
Oh, excellent. Well, it's nice that, you know, that it's available around the world. Obviously, I've had a conflag with my Australian listeners who aren't particularly happy that the ABC in Australia hasn't announced the launch date for the new series of Doctor Who. Obviously, America and Britain has already said it's the 23rd of April. Nothing so far for them, so it would be a bit of a shame if the rest of the world is singing and spoiling it for the Australians. And there is it says Tuesday the 15th of March. Tom Baker signs for Big Finish. Do feel rather inclined to acquire the stories that he actually does for Big Finish, but I bet you they'll be part of a subscription.
Yeah.
And I can't afford a subscription. Sorry, Nick Briggs, friend of the show, can't afford a subscription, unfortunately. my money goes on this podcast, I'm afraid. I've just upgraded. I'll just say about the donations, but people have donated to the podcast. Thank you very much. And it has made a difference because I've upgraded the account so as I can actually fit the larger shows actually on the server. And it was a case that I was nearly filling up the server, and it was a position where I might not have been able to do a show this week and next week because we didn't have enough space for it. So I had to upgrade the account to fit that. And that's all down to listener donations, so thank you very much. Just to show that your money has made a difference to our show.
What about the announcement of the title for the first episode, the Impossible Astronaut?
Yes, that's right. Now, glad you reminded me of that because I completely forgotten. Even though I just had a screenshot that said that. So here we go. Yes, you're reining me in here, Kirby. Yes. Well done. Yes, so that's quite interesting, isn't it? And apparently it's the two-parter. A series begins with the two-parter that also includes River Song.
I'm wondering if the Impossible Astronaut is going to be connected in any way to the Impossible Planet.
Hmm. Possibly. Or this, you know, did you see the little teaser trailer they played after the Christmas special, which had this astronaut, which for me either looked like one of the astronauts from the Silence in the Library story, similar sort of, you know, Vasha Narada sort of thing, or the astronaut from Ambassadors of Death. I know any astronaut could be associated with either of those stories, but it could be like you say, because I can't remember the Doctor wore an astronaut's outfit, that, didn't he? But wasn't it red?
Yes.
So, yes, it could be one of three things, couldn't it?
There was also markings on the one guy in that story.
Hmm.
And I'm trying to think if maybe the tally marks we've seen on River and on Amy have any connection there.
Yeah, that's true. So do you think that, that's actually part of that story? Obviously, we've seen these quick clips of the marks on the characters' faces. Do you think that's connected with that story? Or
it's possible. Yeah, yeah. This is the one that is set in Area 51. So
this is the Utah filmed one, then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that'd be...
And I'm thinking that all of this is all connected.
Yeah. So we'll get to see the I Wear a Stetson Now, Stetsons Are Cool scene fairly early in the series. Yes. Good. Excellent stuff.
Well, I've got to finish packing my lunch and get ready to head out to work here. So.
Well, that's rather good timing then, really, because I've got to... it's 1:45 and Ben's supposed to be calling in very soon, so... Great stuff. Oh, rather good timing. Couldn't have been timed better. Splendid. Thank you, Kirby.
Okay. So let's plan again next week.
Hopefully so. Yes. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
Okay.
See you later. Bye. Right on cue. Here's Ben.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Better than yesterday. I had a terrible day yesterday. Hence, there's no Alicia on the podcast this week.
Oh dear, why no Alicia?
Oh, very trivial reasons. But don't worry about it. I don't want to go there now. Not her fault. Not her fault, hasten to point out. It's just circumstances beyond her control that led to a day of minor disagreement, shall we say, between her and her mother. Which had a knock-on effect, made them both miserable, and by the time we got back to the evening when it could have been a podcast recording session, I hadn't watched Terror of the Zygons, so instead of doing the podcast with her, I had to watch Terror of the Zygons, and that's basically what happened. She wasn't available this week, that's basically what's happened. So apologies to listeners who like me getting, basically got to listen to Alicia having no connection with the podcast. I don't know, why do people possibly find that entertaining? I don't understand it.
I don't either, quite frankly.
Anyway, defeats me. But anyway, we're here now. So, I'll do the... Because obviously you've got some things to read out, one of which is our feedback. But if we do that after we review Terror of the Zygons, because I think there's... He talks about it, doesn't he? Right, we're going to have to let this clock run its course, because it's going to do 12 bongs.
Okay, so we count them again?
No. Did you see Space and Time on Comic Relief?
Of course I did.
That we have to ask. And what did you think?
I really enjoyed it, actually. Two Amy Ponds. Oh, I think I'm a dream man. Oh.
And Rory's view. I don't want to be a bit too pervy, but Rory's view from under the TARDIS floor.
Oh, I did laugh at that bit, yes.
You can tell they'd scheduled it for a slightly later than usual spot.
Yes. So written off for that. Did make me giggle that bit, and also got a little bit of a titter from the wife, who's not a Doctor Who fan.
Obviously, you've heard the news we've already mentioned in the show with Matt Smith being confirmed for series 2012.
Yes, he says, I was reading a couple of bits and bobs about that, and he obviously really enjoys doing it. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, I don't think there's probably been a doctor in history who hasn't enjoyed doing it apart from Colin Baker.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously different reasons for that. But no, Matt Smith loves doing it. He says he'll do this series and then next series, and then he'll see how it stands which is completely non-committal, but you can completely understand that, because if he gets a big offer from Hollywood or something...
Yeah, then like David Tennant did.
Yeah, you can kind of like understand why he didn't. But understand why he'd quit. I mean, I still don't understand why Tennant quit, to be honest with you. But, you know,
no, nor do I. Probably because he knew Russell T. Davis was going. But that's another story. Talking of stories, I have here The Mail on Sunday. Did you see the Mail on Sunday?
No.
I've got to find the page.
It's my money on that tap.
Now, if this were a radio show, you'd have the paper already open on the relevant page, like I did before my wife tidied it up.
I do like the added sound effect, paper turning.
That's Podcast Sound Effects 3.
Is it? Is this 3 track 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Chaco's got him a bit tinny, like him.
For goodness sake. Oh, no. It doesn't track the particular bit. Oh, here we are. Here we are, I've found it.
The Mail on Sunday is, so far you must have turned over about 50 pages and found nothing interesting, which is why I don't buy it.
Harsh.
But true.
These, of course, are not the opinions of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Right, so this is the Mail on Sunday. This has been reported on various Doctor Who websites, etc., but I this is where I first saw it. BBC sued over who first drew the Dalek mastermind Davros. By Chris Hastings. Davros, the evil leader of the Daleks and one of Doctor Who's most formidable opponents, has endured his fair share of intergalactic struggles. But now the mutual megalomaniac is at the centre of a very different kind of battle here on Earth. A lifelong Doctor Who fan claims he dreamt up the character when he was just 13 and is suing the BBC for breach of copyright. Stephen Clark, 51, says he invented Davros for a competition run by the now defunct TV Action magazine in 1972. Entrants were asked to create a comic strip villain, and Mr. Clark claims he invented the name Davros and sent in a drawing of the character along with handwritten essay of Genesis of the Daleks, Creation of Davros. His drawing, a pencil sketch coloured in with felt pens, shows a half-man, half-Dalek, with an additional eye at the centre of his forehead, a handset, a withered left hand and finger-like switchgear on the Dalek base. The father of three, Mr. Clark from Ashford, Kent, has now launched a High Court proceeding to try and prove the BBC and its commercial arm, BBC Worldwide, have been using the character without his permission for nearly four decades. Obviously, then the story goes on. And there's a little representation of his drawing of Davros, which looks like Davros, funny enough. And the original letter he wrote in for the competition. And he's holding in a picture of him holding the TV Action magazine in question, which incorporated the competition. So, that's, I thought, a very, very interesting story.
Does he still have the original... Well, so what's he holding up? A letter, a copy of the letter he wrote?
He's holding up a picture of the comic, the TV comic thing, which had the competition that he entered, this idea of Davros.
But he hasn't... What proof does he have, apart from the fact that he's claiming this?
Not sure. Maybe I need to read the rest of it. But there are pictures of the letters he wrote in his 13-year-old handwriting, and the drawing that he originally did.
A photograph of
his drawing, his original entry into the competition.
His original drawing?
Apparently so. But it gets me to thinking that if he'd sent this in to this competition, would they have sent it back to him? I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Well, this is what I'm questioning, because how... If he sent the letter in to the BBC initially, how then can he be holding the letter or have a copy of the letter unless he wrote two and sent one off and kept the other one just in case 35 years later he decided he wanted to sue the BBC?
I mean, it is also a bit funny that it's taken all this time to come up. You would have thought that he would have mentioned it somewhere along the line. I mean, I'm not saying he's not telling the truth, but it's just a bit odd it's taken all this long to come up. You know, like Doctor Who was gone for 16 years and, you know, the Davros was in lots of stories in that time, and, you know, it's just a bit odd.
It's very odd. He obviously thinks he's got some sort of claim on it. Mm. Whether he has, I think it'll be very interesting to find out. It's, I'd say, not saying, you know, that he's not telling the truth. Oh, absolutely not. Wouldn't want to be sued by some man who's got this story, but you kind of think maybe he won't win.
Yeah, it's interesting also that, you know, he's put down as being a Doctor Who fan. Ironic that perhaps if he did win and he wins millions of pounds in compensation, that the BBC might have to budget that by removing Doctor Who from the airways. And that could be, I mean, it's obviously hypothetical, but, you know, you think of these sort of scenarios going through, because obviously the BBC funded by us, that means we would then technically have to pay him this money for breach of copyright, etc.
I'll say we probably won't hear too much more about it.
No, I think I'm starting to go off on one now. I need to get back on track. Terror of the Zygons.
Oh, yes!
We'll talk about that in a minute. After the break. No, sorry, I turned into Philip Schofield for a moment then.
Did you? Very good. Yeah, I was thinking just for a moment there.
No, because I forgot. I think it's well beyond time. We moved on to the charts.
Oh, the charts!
Yeah. Now, the reason I thought it might be good if you read that, the charts this week, Ben, is because in your previous incarnation as a radio presenter, I seem to remember when a chart is read out on the radio, that it's a bit more embellished than the way I do it, which is just number 20, blah, blah, blah. They say, and they sort of just make up these little bits of blurb in between. I'm just interested to see how you portray the charts this week. Are you ready?
I am. I should think it'll be pretty poor. Okay, so the whole top 20?
Yep.
Okay. The thing is, I don't know. I don't know if it was up or down from last week, and that's a big thing.
Don't worry about the up and downs.
Okay, at 20, the Oodcast. At 19, 2 Minute Time Lord. In at 18, Ian Todd World. Number 17 is Little Finish. I'll do that again. At 17 is Little Finish. Number 16, Dirty Hooers. At 15, The Untempered Schism. 14 is Radio Rassilon. At 13, Bad Wilf, my favourite name podcast apart from the 20 megabyte Doctor Who. Thought I'd better get that bit in. At 12, The Doctor's Companion. Number 11, Waffle On. Number 10, Staggering Stories. At 9, The Doctor Who Review Today. Number 8, The Pharos Project. At 7, surely the best Doctor Who podcast ever been made, ever, ever, ever. Get your friends to download it and download it twice because it might count. The 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And the top 6 are frankly irrelevant after that. Number 6, The Minute Doctor Who podcast. Number 5,
The Minute Doctor Who podcast.
Oh, sorry. At number 6, The Minute Doctor Who podcast. I thought that would have been a bit short for a minute. What are they going to do in that? We don't even get onto any subjects in a minute. At number 6, The Minute Doctor Who podcast. At number 5, Flashing Blade. At 4, DWO WhoCast. At 3, Radio Free Scaro. At number 2, Doctor Who podcast. And at number 1, Tin Dog.
Brilliant, well done.
Why don't I work on the radio anymore? It's really hard to see, isn't it?
Yes,
maybe all those program controllers that sacked me were right.
Dear. It was lovely. It was a little bit fast, that's all. But with the bits in between, I think it was ended up being about the same length of time as I would have done it, but still better than me. It's still more interesting than the way I read it out, to be honest with you.
If you want.
Anyway, right. Yeah, talking of one of the podcasts you mentioned a bit lower down the charts, which was, I'll just change pages, bear with me, which was Ian Todd World, the Mondas podcast, specifically. Featuring me this week. So, listeners, if you want to hear me sound like a complete twit more than normal, listen in or to download Ian Todd World Mondas podcast, I think it's called. Anyway, I'm on it.
What are you doing on it?
Guesting.
Guesting?
No, I'm a guest on the show, on Ian Todd's podcast.
Okay. Have you recorded it yet?
I have downloaded it. The trouble is, when he Skyped me, or did I Skype him? He Skyped me first, and then I missed the call, and so I Skyped him back. And instead of being, oh, hello, Adam, I was just going to start recording, blah, 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 he said, oh, hello, Adam, and just he sort of rather stumped me, because he was recording. So just while I didn't
Straight
scare
away?
Him. Straight away. So it took me a little bit of time to get into my stride, because I sort of realised by the way he was talking to me that he was actually recording. So...
It's always good to get a warning that you're doing something recording.
I just caught my nail on my jeans and it's bleeding.
An interesting nail news. I cut my toenails earlier.
Anyway, right. I'm shedding blood for this podcast now. Anyway, right, so we move on. And I keep saying anyway, I've noticed in podcasts quite a lot. Rather like Reese Parton of the Who Is A Man Now Defunct podcast. Not defunct, but he's... he decided to not do a podcast for a while, which really disappoints me because I do like Reese Parton. He's very enthusiastic about podcasting. And
if it disappoints you, it disappoints me as well.
Yeah, and he goes, a lot. And he actually, whilst he's doing the podcast, says he's said, too many times. But on this occasion...
Yeah, but the thing is, as someone with a little bit of broadcast experience, you tend to pick up on those things more than anyone else does.
Yeah, possibly so. But I notice I say, anyway, quite a lot.
Anyway, let's get on with it.
Moving on, Terror of the Zygons.
Anyway.
And you have your notes in your head, I doubt.
I have my notes, yeah, as usual, in my head. Yeah.
So, part one. I'm going to call it part one because that's what they were called on the show, rather than episodes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah. I get your point there.
Written by Robert Banks Stewart.
Yes, one of my favourite Banks Stewarts of them all.
I wonder if he's from the Clan Stewart.
I wonder.
Mm. Part one.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
An oil rig with a stereotype Scotsman dreaming of a haggis chatting over the radio.
That was one of the best starts I've ever seen to a Doctor Who episode. How stereotypical do you want to get? If he had a Celtic or Rangers football top on, yeah, and he was wearing a kilt, then it couldn't have been any more stereotypical.
Well, they only held back of him wearing the daft hat and the tartan, or the kilt, etc., because obviously they had the characters later on in the story wearing these particular props.
Yes.
But anyway, he's chatting over his radio, but he's soon calling Mayday as his oil rig crashes into the sea.
Which looked good.
Good effect, yes. Yeah. The Doctor, in tartan scarf and Scottish hat, with Sarah
Look
Jane and
brilliant.
Harry... Mm-hmm. Did really suit him. You must have Scottish roots. Anyway, with Sarah Jane and Harry are trying to find something, a road. They catch a lift from the Duke of Forgill. It got a brilliant drawl, that actor, isn't he? That player, I can't remember his name, but he played the Duke of Forgill. The drawl, it's all very drawly voice. Brilliant. Units are occupying a nearby village, or it seems to be the village anyway, but it probably was just the pub. And the Brigadier has requisitioned the pub, as I just said, as his HQ. A comical scene between the Doctor and the Brigadier follows, and Sarah Jane giggles at the Brigadier's kilt. Quite like that scene. That's the scene, one of the scenes I picked out in my tribute to Nicholas Courtney a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, welcome back, Doctor.
I want to know one thing, Brigadier.
What's that? That, Doctor, is a kilt.
Suits you very well.
Oh, do you think so?
Yes.
I trust the army isn't going to help those people. Is that why you were sent here?
No, sir. We're a military investigation team.
Investigating what?
I'm afraid our mission is a sensitive matter, sir.
Official secrets and all that twaddle, eh? Well, I won't pry. Although my family have served this country for seven centuries, but that seems not to count these days, does it? And good day to you.
What an odd man. Rather medieval in his ideas.
A man of convictions.
All the same, he did save us a long walk, sir.
Anyway, it's nice to see you again, Brigadier.
And you, Miss Smith.
I didn't expect to see you in a kilt.
My dear Miss Smith, as you remember, my name is Lethbridge Stewart. The Clan Stewart.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were doing a doctor.
An absurd idea.
Brigadier.
Yeah, I see why.
A body is washed up on a shore.
Well, scary.
Not a dead body, but a body. The Doctor tells the Brigadier that... being dependent on a mineral slime doesn't make sense, and they should look at energising of hydrogen, which I thought was quite, at the for the time, looking at what we're looking at with fuel problems now, quite in keeping.
Yeah, absolutely. He was way
ahead. I was going to say ahead of its time was the phrase I was looking for, but didn't come to mind until too late, unfortunately. Harry and Sarah go off to investigate. In the pub, Sarah chats with Mr. McRanald, who used to be in Crossroads, and he was in, what's that, the one with Steve McQueen in it, the escaping one.
The Great Escape?
Yes, he was in that.
The escapey one, not the great one. The one that was really good.
Anyway, Mr. McRanald, and he noticed the stag, she notices the stag head mounted on the wall. Their conversation is being monitored by a strange alien. Sarah employs her journalistic skills.
Can I ask a question at this point?
No, bye. Oh, go on then, yes.
Why is it that all aliens in Doctor Who never have a rectangle or square-shaped television or screen on the wall?
Yeah, it's either strange...
The Zygons one had, was all cut out, all fancified, like that someone had gone out and bought a jigsaw tool.
Yes.
And gone, oh, look what we can do with this! I'm really overexcited.
It's very odd, isn't it? Because obviously in TVs, in the, real-hour TVs in the early days, they couldn't make them with just pointed corners. They had a curly, sort of curvy corners, didn't they? Until we got to the 80s, when the flat square tube, a more basic square screen started coming into play. But in those days, even the TARDIS TV screen had curvy corners.
Well, that's when it... Yeah, actually, you're right, yeah.
Anyway,
it was playing on my mind.
Understandably.
The
body on the beach gets up and staggers to shore. A ginger-bearded man in a kilt, stereotype again, is prowling with his shotgun as Harry arrives. He spots a staggering man who collapses. He goes, this is Harry. Obviously, Harry goes to help him and is shot by the bearded man before he can tell the story to Harry. Obviously, Harry's shot as well. Sarah is back with the doctor when the news that Harry has been shot comes over the phone. The aliens fiddle with their nipple-like controls and whisper to each other. Whisper to each other. That's the thing about this whispering bit, and I'll come to that later. A signal is sent out, and a monster stirs under the water. Harry is unconscious in hospital. Dr. Brigg and Sarah Jane visit him. There is a sinister-looking nurse looking after him, and Sarah stays behind on a vigil while the Brigg and Doctor investigate some wreckage with the curious-looking marks on them, which turn out to be giant teeth marks. Harry wakes up. He's a bit delirious. Sarah asks him questions, but gets no answers. Sarah leaves to call the doctor. Something scares Harry, and while Sarah's on the phone to the doctor, something scary grabs her. End of episode one. Sorry, end of part one, which was only 20 minutes long, funny enough. Very short
22
episode.
22, mine was.
Was it?
I think you remember 22, yeah.
Okay. Something like that, anyway.
Time Let's not get picky. Tea.
Interesting to note that my particular DVD copy of this was recorded off UK TV, no, not UK drama.
Right.
And I edited out the adverts, thank goodness.
And actually, I found one on one of the video playing website things that was the original recording off the TV.
Cool.
Yeah, well, you say that, but the colour was a bit rubbish. No, but I managed to get through it.
Yeah. Part two. The doctor and Benton arrive at the hospital, but the creepy nurse tells them nothing useful. The doctor finds Sarah Jane in the decompression chamber, and they are soon locked in. Harry is in the company of Broton, leader of the Zygons, and he is informed that they need to make Earth theirs. Surprise, surprise. Sarah is suffocating. The doctor hypnotises Sarah Jane to help her through... to help get her through the pain of having no air to breathe, basically. And he takes one last gulp of air. I just love that scene. I think it's such a... You feel...
It's really freaky.
Yeah. It's something very unusual, but that's always stuck in my mind as one of my favourite scenes from that era of Doctor Who. It's just them two, and they're so desperate, yet he saves her, in a typical doctorish sort of way, and I really, really do like that scene. And also hypnotises, because obviously Time Lords have the ability to hypnotise, but the Doctor doesn't use the ability very often.
Yeah.
Only with Agador and Sarah, but so far at the time. In the pub, the Brigadier and the Corporal are gassed. Benton discovers Sarah Jane and the Doctor and gets to them. Basically Benton saves the day. A monster is prowling the Misty Moors. Very similar to the Drashig monster, actually, but obviously slightly redesigned. Zygons prepare Harry for use as the Zygons' signalling device is discovered. They make a body print of Harry to go along with the others they already have. The Brigadier wakes up and wonders what he's doing on the floor. You were asleep, Brigadier. Nonsense, I was on duty. I quite like that particular exchange. Sarah's left alone in the pub while the Brigadier and the Doctor investigate. They keep disappearing to investigate things, I noticed in this story. They can't seem to stay put very often. Another dead body, obviously. Sarah types on a typewriter as Harry appears. Harry in inverted commas, because it's not really Harry.
Not really Harry.
He grabs the Zygon's gadget thingy and leaves, and Sarah pursues him with the help of some soldiers. They arrive at a farm where Harry, in inverted commas, hides in a barn. And he's very clumsy because he knocks over something as he's climbing up this ladder. And it was terrible because he's all this sort of stuff fell down. You could have quite at least, you can't miss it. It was all bright coloured and everything. So. And Sarah climbs up the ladder and finds him. And then Harry attacks her with a fork thing, but ends up ends up falling. And then she sees him as an injured Zygon lying on the floor. But the Zygons from their headquarters molecularly disperse him.
Do you like a good bit of molecular dispersion?
Sip of tea. Sarah has realised that they are being watched. The Zygon gadget thing starts moving, and the Doctor puts it in his pocket and makes off the unit with a unit Land Rover to the moors. The gadget thing emits a signal, as if it, and then it sticks fast to the Doctor's hand, making him go, ow. Not quite that sort of ow. Obviously, that's quite a painful experience, having a little bit of plastic stuck to the palm of your hand. And then he's being chased by the puppet. I mean, sorry, the monster thing. The Brigadier identifies that the signal is coming from Loch Ness. And Broton orders... Excuse me. I say that again because I burped. Broton orders that the monster destroy the Doctor. Die, Doctor, die.
They do that quite a lot, don't they?
Yes. The best Die, Doctor, Die bit was the one from Pyramids of Mars, where he goes, it's not Die, Doctor, but he says to the character, Die, I bring Sutex, gift of death to all humans. I just love that particular scene. That line is so brilliantly delivered. I know we're digressing somewhat, but it just reminded me of it. Sorry.
we may digress.
Part 3. Harry somehow manages to get into the Zygon control room. I never worked out how he managed that, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he disrupts events, which goes on to save the Doctor, obviously, because of the... I think it's because the thing becomes unstuck from his hand and he's able to chuck it somewhere.
Yeah, something like that,
wasn't it? The Loch Ness Monster is called the Skarazan, or Skarazan, or something like that. And the replicator, which is what the gadget's called, is thought to been destroyed. But the Doctor finds, yeah, they thought it was destroyed. And obviously haven't got very good sensors, these Zygons, because it clearly wasn't destroyed. Because they gave up very quickly. In fact, they gave up fairly quickly a couple of times in this story. Anyway, the Doctor finds it in the long grass. Benton is still looking for the bug in the pub. And he nearly finds it in the Stag's Head. So Broton decides that they're going to remove the camera, or the monitor, as he calls it. The Doctor is picked up by Sarah Jane and the Doctor. They head for Fallgill Castle to visit the Duke, or Broton in brackets. Mr. McRanald is cleaning the Stag's Head when the eye is removed. The Duke tries to poo-poo the claims that the Doctor and Sarah Jane have, because obviously it's Broton. Mr. Yeah. McRanald is trying to remove the Stag's Head from the wall when the battle-axe nurse arrives. He changes into a Zygon and throttles him to death. Benton arrives too late and the eye of the stag has been removed. In the woods, the soldiers shoot the Zygon and injured it. The Doctor is still fending off... Sorry, I'll start again. The Duke is still fending off the Doctor's ridiculous claims when the phone rings and it's the Brigadier. And it's Benton providing him with the news that there's been a
Prime Zygon. Minister.
not yet.
Oh, sorry, my head.
Elias, there's a Zygon cornered in the woods. The Brigadier and the Doctor leave Sarah Jane behind again and poke around. Zygon creepy nurse appears with the blood running down her arm and clubs the soldier to death.
With a rock?
Yes.
Beautiful. 5:30, Saturday evening, let's club people with rocks.
The Doctor deduces that the Duke is at the centre of everything as he supplies the Stag's Head to the pub and they left Sarah Jane all alone with him. And Sarah removes a book from the shelf and the cabinet opens up. Because of the cable brings along this sort of step thing. And
yeah.
Acts quite sinister and doesn't say much. And, so that she gets down this secret passage. And when the Duke comes back in and realises the door's open, he looks a little bit narked. And goes down the passage, and Sarah makes her way into the Zygon control room, which is obviously not particularly good security in this control room.
Yeah.
And she finds all the original humans. Broton tells Kaber that Sarah must be found and destroyed, not found and killed. It's always destroyed, isn't it? These bloody words like, excellent. You must destroy them. Sarah finds Harry, but is not sure it's the real him until he says, old girl.
Mm.
The Doctor and the Brigadier arrive as Harry and Sarah escape. The Doctor decides to enter the secret passageway. He screams in agony from within and two Zygons emerge. Make one move and the Doctor dies. Surprise, they haven't just killed him like they did want to at the end of the previous episode.
Yeah, we must kill him, but we won't.
Broton makes it clear that a plan to take over the Earth before disappearing and closing the door to the secret passage. The Brigadier is planning to blow the Zygon and set out of the water. There is a big bang and the Doctor says, "Sounds like the Brigadier." The Zygons launched their spaceship. And that's the end of that episode.
Ah, yeah. Looked quite good again, a little spaceship flying up. Big spaceship flying up.
Episode 4, part 4, sorry. The Zygons head for London. The Doctor questions Broton about how he can take over the world while still in hiding. You have to come onto the balcony and wave a tentacle, if you pardon the expression, says the Doctor. I thought it was quite a good line. The Zygon ship lands in a quarry. Very conveniently placed quarry, obviously.
Yeah, very.
The Teletubbies trumpet appears, and a message is whispered from within it. Avoid detection. Now, this whispering thing will come to amuse me later on in this episode, so I'll come to that in a sec.
That actually just quite scared me.
It's not just the fact that it looked like a Teletubbies trumpet thing. The sound effects reminded me of it as well, actually.
Yeah.
And the fact this whisper came out of it. Anyway, the Brigadier... I've said it again... The Brigadier reports to Sarah Jane and Harry that a large underwater object is travelling south at high speed. It's the Scarazan, stroke puppet, stroke monster, Loch Ness monster. You admire our technology, human? Broton asks the Doctor as he's caught poking around. I'm not human, and I've seen better. The Zygon refugee force will arrive in many centuries' time, but Broton's crew need to restructure the Earth in preparation. Now, this is quite interesting, the fact that they must be still on their way, I would have thought, this Zygon force. So we've got, how many years have we got to go now? Many centuries, so eventually, I suppose, they'll get here.
They would have done eventually, maybe by, Sylvester McCoy's reign.
Now, in my view, these Zygons are actually a really, really good-looking alien. And I say, when I was a child, I remember having a nightmare that involved them. So they had a big impact.
Really? Oh, scary.
I'm surprised they haven't sort of brought them back, because they've brought back sort of less alien-looking aliens from the classic series. They've never brought back the Zygons, which is so... You know, they're quite iconic, really, because, I don't, you know, if you're a big fan of Doctor Who, you'll always remember and know what a Zygon is. In fact, I've got a Zygon figure on my shelf in the other room. You know, there's a lot of sort of more regular appearing aliens that they, you know, they've also bought out figures for. But yeah, I'm surprised they haven't bought it back. Obviously, half a big finish, but not on the TV series.
Yeah.
You are underestimating human beings, Broton, says the Doctor. And back at Unit HQ, and I only noticed it was Unit HQ because of the green paint on the walls. Benson and Sarah Jane are twiddling their thumbs. Well, not in a sort of literal sense, they're just sort of, you know, just sort of sitting there waiting. The Prime Minister calls.
Absolutely
understood, madam, says the Brigadier, which I thought was brilliant.
Yes, he spoke to Maggie very well, didn't he?
It's interesting to note that, obviously, when this story went out, Thatcher had only just become leader of the Conservative Party, so obviously they would have had some inkling that she might have become Prime Minister at some stage, but she wasn't actually Prime Minister.
Yeah, because it would have been too early for her to be Prime Minister, couldn't it? Yeah, by a couple of years.
So that was quite a good line, really. The Doctor is using his body to send a message to UNIT so as they can get some sort of triangulation on it, and of course it stings him a tad. The Brigadier has a ball patch, I noticed, when he bent down. That was the first time I've noticed him having a ball. Did you notice that when he bent?
No. I didn't pick up on that, no.
The Doctor appears to be dead. Not very good at medical things, are these Zygons, are they?
No.
He's dead. So anybody who's lying on the ground is dead, apparently.
That'll do, he's dead.
The Doctor realises that... releases the real Duke of Forger. Broton departs to complete his plan. The Doctor has released the other humans. The alarm sounds, the Zygons run through, and the humans and the Doctor sabotage the Zygon ship by setting the self-destructor. All these ships, they seem to have very conveniently and easy to set self-destructors, depending on how important it is to the plot.
Yeah, well, that's understandable.
And of course they leg it. I've only got 60 seconds to get out.
Which Yeah, a bit more than 60 seconds.
I don't know how they managed that, because obviously they would have had to come out for a door, climb down the ladder, then run across in 60 seconds. So it was quite an achievement, I thought.
I think they did very well.
And I thought, excuse me, the Zygons, which is what made me laugh, the Zygons are trapped within some room within the ship going, "Open this door."
That's really scary. Can you stop that?
Really shouting at the top of their voices, "Open this door."
Open it now. I'm really angry.
Of course, nobody can hear them. Surprise, surprise. Boom! What a superb explosion that was.
Yes, a big bang.
Yes, I'm sure they were completely satisfied with that particular prop going up in bangs. Superb explosion. Was that a big enough bang for you, Brigadier? Says the Doctor. I've done it again.
Oh, you did, yes.
God help me. They head for London. Stanbridge House, to be precise. The monster is nearly there. Broton is mortified to find the Doctor is alive, and he goes berserk and a fight ensues. Sarah Jane calls for the Brigadier, who lets one of his own soldiers get killed before shooting the Zygon dead. You notice that? He was just standing there. This soldier comes round the corner. The Zygon grabs him, throttles him, then the Brigadier shoots him.
Yeah. I'll have him first. Have him. Yeah. Have him pray, and then I'll sort you out.
Yeah.
And they thought he was a nice character. Well...
Oh, that's an interesting TARDIS noise.
That's my text message.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Anyway, Broton has hidden the signal device in the room somewhere, and it turns out it's in the Doctor's pocket, which I thought was quite funny. Shush! It's around here somewhere. Oh, it's in my pocket. The Doctor throws the signal device at the puppet. Sorry, Salazan, who's in the Thames at this particular point. He chews on it a little bit and breaks it, and then legs it, swims it back to Loch Ness. The only home it knows, says the Doctor. Then they're back in Scotland and find the TARDIS in the wood. Harry decides to stay behind while the Doctor wants to pilot it all the way back to London 5 minutes previous. Harry decides to use Intercity to get to London, and Sarah Jane reluctantly agrees as long as they go back to London and the Doctor promises.
Right there.
Yes. Not much of a... he's not reliable when it comes to promises and stuff.
No, but as we know from the Planet of Evil, they didn't get to London.
True. And that concludes my notes on Terror of the Zygons. What did you think?
Yeah, I liked the episode. It was. I do enjoy Sunday nights now, because I always watch the whole episode on a Sunday night. So I do enjoy my Sundays, and I think it looked as I remember Doctor Who looking in the 70s and 80s. It was very Blake 7 special effects, but that's the best they could do at that time, and it looked good. I thought the story was very much like many other Doctor Who stories at that time, which was evil alien turns up, tries to invade the Earth, gets sent packing. But, it was good enough, enjoyable enough. Tom Baker was right on form again. Very good.
It's interesting to note, though, this story is filmed at as part of his previous series block of filming, so it should have been the last one of his first series, but they held it back to be the first one of this one. Hence, everybody looked the same as they did in... what's it called again? The Cyberman story? Revenge of the Cyberman.
Revenge of the Cyberman, yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. I was unaware of that. That's stat.
Because you'll notice that next story, Planet of Evil, the Doctor's costume changes and Sarah's hair is much longer. Sorry, no. Being a bit pedantic, but that's actually the case.
I didn't pick up on that, I'm afraid.
Right. So, to sum up, it was okay. It's lovely to see Nick Courtney, especially after recent events, in really good form in this episode, bearing in mind it's his last regular appearance as the Brigadier.
Yeah, no, he was obviously, as you remember him being. And I thought it was quite nice, actually, that, our randomizer picked a story with Nicholas Courtney in it to have a look at this week. So that was quite nice. Good episode, though. As ever, enjoyed it. No real qualms against it.
No, I agree. It was nice. Again, we seem to have a lot of Tom Baker stories recently to review, but I'm not going to object to that.
Neither am I. Never.
It's also a bit of a shame that Harry left at the end of the story, because I did like his character.
Yeah, it wasn't really touched on, though, was it? It was kind of like, are you coming with me? Nah. All right, then, bye. Like, what? Hold on, what have you... You've been travelling around with me for God knows how long. You don't even get a firm handshake. We're just going to...
Well, he did say that he was going to be meet up with the Doctor in London, didn't he? I think he was just going to go by train. I think that was the plan. And of course, he does meet up with the Doctor again briefly in the android invasion. But that's another story. So, before we randomise another story, which I'll discuss what's happening next week to you in a minute, but would you like to read out Robert's feedback?
I would. How much of it would you like? Because a lot of it is, review kind of like of the episode we have just reviewed. I shall read the whole thing if you wish.
To save getting into trouble, Robert, I think you better read the whole thing.
I hoped you were going to say that. this letter, email, comes in from Robert. He starts off, "Hello Ben, Adam, Alicia and Isabel." He doesn't actually say that. He says Adam, Alicia and Ben, but I'm reading it, so I go first. He says, "Nice to have a little chat with you on Skype and saying hello to Isabella. Thought I'd share a few things about Terror of the Zygons. Have to say that the model work throughout the story was consistently good. Nice destruction of the oil rig at the beginning, though it looked a bit cramped in the radio room." Funny that the radio operator was the only survivor of the explosion. Maybe he hid under the table. Don't know. The Doctor in Scottish-type garb and bagpipes. Oh, that's the one thing I forgot to mention at the beginning of the episode. Those bagpipes were driving me mental.
Well, they were supposed to, weren't they? Because they drove the other characters mental, didn't they?
It worked. The Doctor in Scottish-type garb and bagpipes tells us we're in Scotland, though the Doctor's outfit only lasts until the end of episode two. Sorry, part two. Nice line with Sarah's comment to the Brigadier, doing a Doctor with his kilt wearing. Close-up of Doctor in his Scottish get-up. He did look good, didn't he, Tom Baker, with the Scottish stuff on. A bit of an ecological statement by the Doctor, you mentioned this, that humans should look for an alternative fuel source. I'm wondering if the model of the oil rig at the oil company is the actual model seen at the beginning before painting and the filming of its destruction was added to the edit.
I'd just like to make some sort of disclaimer, as I haven't actually read this email prior to my review, because obviously I didn't want it to taint my review, so it's just quite interesting that he's bringing up some of the points I've already brought up.
Well, it's kind of like a three-way review now.
Yeah.
Your bit, my insert, and now this bit. The first glimpse of the Zygon leaves us wanting to see more. Lots of sinister characters abound. The first glimpses of the Scarison. First glimpse of the Scarison make it look pretty impressive. Nice creepy sound effects all around. Isn't Sister Lamont as Zygon Lamont one of the most sinister nurses you've ever seen? She was scary.
She was.
I wouldn't want her to look after me, he says. I can understand why. There's a good sense of mystery. Great proper glimpse of a Zygon at the end of episode one. Great pacey start to episode two. Then the mystery of where is Harry? I could do a book about that. Put him in a stripy jumper and hide him with lots of other people and see if you can pick him out. Or is that Wally? Oh, yeah. I didn't know why Broton.
Broton, correct.
Yeah. I didn't know why Broton has to explain everything about his plans to tell all the things he plans to bring aboard his ship. He tells Harry about how they are able to look like humans, how they got here and why. Exposition for those watching. Yeah. When the head of the Scarson is shown, the eyes are just a bit too big, googly-eyed. Yeah, it was kind of like it had been made on one of those CITV programs. It's shown, which makes it look a little too comical, especially when it rolls its eyes. Well, that's what it looks like, he brackets. There are bizarre scenes in the hyperbaric chamber. I think that the haircuts of some of the soldiers are a bit dodgy. Long, hey, nothing wrong with long hair. Look at Sergeant Benton's sideburns. Well, it was the 70s. That's what they all did. Lucky he wasn't wearing a Slade-type hat and big...
Well, the Slade-type hat that Tom Baker was wearing in the beginning of the episode.
Well, no, I'm thinking more of one that... what's his name? Out of Slade wore. Not Noddy.
Noddy Holder.
No, not Noddy Holder. Not Noddy.
Oh, yeah, Dave. Remember, right, yeah.
Oh, Dave, he had the mirrored hat, didn't he? Could have been wearing one of them. Could have been wearing platform shoes, for crying out loud. I think things could have been a lot worse. Anyway, he continues. I want to know how Sergeant Benton knows how to operate a hyperbaric chamber. Clearly, it's in the Army's or unit's training.
Yeah.
I think that it's good when we only see glimpses of the scars, and it's more effective that way. Well, it is. Of course, it is. That's the whole thing about, you know, building up terror and horror, isn't it? Not actually showing you what you're afraid of, just giving you the idea you're afraid of something. I think the studio scenes flow nicely to outside scenes. When the Doctor leaves the pub with scars and control, look at it and you will swear that they're filmed one from another. There's a nice contrast between Zygon Harry and normal Harry. I thought it was a bit wrong, for a family show to give a pitchfork being used as a weapon. Roar! I agree. There was a bit when Zygon Harry flew off the barn loft and they cut to Zygon riding on the ground. The Scarson chasing the Doctor was very effective. Loved the bit with the locator control unit stuck to the Doctor's hand. It foreshadowed Turlo and his glowing crystal, he thinks, in brackets. A nice line from Broton with his die, Doctor, die. Harry saved the day nicely with his playing and with the Zygon controls. I love the way he just ran in and bashed them all. Just that one. Broton assumes the Doctor is dead, perhaps a bit hasty, as you mentioned as well. Yeah, well, you know, when you consider that the nurse obviously wasn't a proper nurse, then that's why she was rubbish. So maybe that's why it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
I also thought that the pub landlord freaking out when he dusted the deer's head was a good touch. Great transformation of Sister Lamont into its Zygon form. I felt that looked good, actually. Shame the landlord ended up dead. Maybe he wanted a pint. I don't know. He continues. Pretty violent nurse, that Sister Lamont. Blood coming down the arm and clobbering the soldier with a rock. The whole thing was shown rather than suggested. It was. I mean, you saw, you know, lift the rock up and then the rock started to move down and then the next shot was on the back of his head. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
It was a bit graphic, really.
I thought that myself, but I didn't want to mention it. Should have done, really, but there you go. At least I gave him the chance to mention it.
No, that's exactly why you didn't. You'd sensed it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
The whole thing was showing a little bit. Great atmospheric incidental music. I thought that as well, actually. Funnily, it's the same team of writer Robert Banks Stewart, director Douglas Camfield, and composer that would later go on to do The Great Seeds of Doom. Nice scene when Sarah finds the captive Harry. Are you the real Harry? Which we obviously knew he was because Old Girl came out and wasn't sure if he was talking to Bessie at that point. Why does the Brigadier wipe his hand on the trail of blood and lift his hand to show the Doctor? Why do people on TV or film do that? Just to show it's blood. Can't the Brig just point out the trail of blood? No, you have to touch it to make sure it's blood.
Yes.
Otherwise it could be, I don't know, some sort of red food.
It's funny you should mention about Bessie. It's quite interesting though that Bessie wasn't actually in this story, because they could have done with it instead of all those Land Rovers.
Yeah,
there you go.
But then again, the TARDIS was working properly.
Was it?
Well, no,
they parked in the wood, didn't they?
It wasn't parked properly, but working properly. But if it was, then they wouldn't have. Anyway, Bessie would have been good.
Ah, you said anyway now. Hooray!
The Doctor doesn't exactly look like he's been attacked in his next scene. Oh, that's from the... Oh, yeah, sorry, I missed out a line. It says, why the scream from the Doctor... This is obviously the end of part three. Why the scream from the Doctor when he meets the Zygons? The Doctor doesn't exactly look like he's been attacked in his next scene. Yeah, but when we think about it, you know, if we zoom on a bit to the end of... or near the end of episode four, part four... When the Zygons are actually attacking the Doctor, all they're doing is giving him a little bit of a tickle on the shoulder. So, maybe he doesn't like being tickled. The mortar being used to attack the Zygon ship looks a bit rubbish, but then the explosions are pretty impressive. I seem to notice that Broughton has a larger head than the others. Great design for the Zygons.
I'm talking about Broughton. He obviously had a more detailed costume. If you notice, the other sort of subsidiary Zygons seem to have these quite open mouths that look like fish sort of mouths. And I did notice that they look. I thought they actually looked better, to be honest with you. The fact they had these weird sort of alien-looking mouths, whereas Broton's mouth was quite a human-ish, more human-looking mouth. There you go. That's what I'm going to say on that one.
I did notice that. I must have been blinking at that point. The design of the Zygon ship inside and out is great, looking suitably alien. Great design for the Zygons, a cross between a fetus and an octopus. So maybe a fetopus.
Yeah.
Or an octopus. No, I prefer a fetus. Again, Broton is very helpful in explaining his plans to the Doctor. Again, there's a hasty assumption that the Doctor is dead. For the second time in this story, this one's even worse if they don't even get a good examination. It would have been nice when the Zygon ship exploded that we should have had some debris fall on the Doctor and company. Really? To really sell what was happening was in the same place. Yeah, but, you know, that costs money and special effects and having to get health and safety people to make sure that people don't get... Oh, actually, but this was the 70s. There was no health and safety. They should have done that. You're quite right. You've mentioned this as well. I didn't know why the Brig and his men didn't shoot Broton before he throttled the poor soldier. You've got to let him have one kill, haven't you? It was a bit too comical when, after the Doctor had thrown the control device into his mouth, we had this chewing motion. We're trying to take this monster seriously? I thought that there was a nice contrast between the Zygon humans and the real humans. Yeah, they were definitely different, weren't they? Could tell which one. It really sold it that they were not the real person.
Yeah.
John Woodnutt was one of the standouts.
That's the name I was looking for and I forgot earlier on. Yeah, well done.
John Woodnutt? No, mm-hmm. I didn't. One of the standouts, great as Brown and June.
He went on to play a character in Tom Baker's penultimate story, which was The Keeper of Traken.
Yeah, which one? What, was he the Keeper of Traken in that, was he?
He played one of the little sort of keeper's helper. I can't remember what they called him in the story, actually. We'll have to watch it at some point, obviously. But he was
the
one
keeper's
of,
helpers?
You know, there were these three little guardians of the keeper's
helpers.
I can't remember what they were called, but anyway, he played one of them.
It's called Kelpers. I like Kelpers.
He didn't say Kelpers, I said helpers.
No, but...
Oh, Kelpers, I see what you mean now.
The keeper's helpers, so the Kelpers.
Kelpers, yeah, okay.
You run out of coffee. Is your brain
Did you
going?
Invent the phrase Jedward by any chance?
God, no. And if I'd invented Jedward, then I'd made sure they were buried 6 feet on the ground. In a concrete
digression.
Team.
Digression. Left a little jingle made up going, digression alert, digression alert.
Maybe we should get a little buzzer that we play in every time.
Digression alert.
A nice little joke at the end of the story about the so-called tight-fisted nature of the Scotsman. Yes, that was funny.
Yeah.
Keith Ashley and Ronald Goff play the other Zygons, having been various monsters over the years in Doctor Who. I think that I saw their names appear in the Mutts in the Mutants too.
That is pretty thorough, you know, examining of the credits, I have to say. Especially if you watch the credits with Infotext, you get even more credits. It's quite impressive.
Credits about the credits.
Yeah. Well, added people that weren't actually mentioned in the credits to start off with, a bit like Delia Derbyshire, never mentioned as, you know, the person who composed the, you know, the theme tune was always Ron Grainer, who gets the credit for that. And Ron Grainer himself is also... do you know that piece of music that used to be the theme tune to TFI Friday?
Dun, 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 dun.
That's a Ron Grainer piece of music.
Yes, it is. You're quite right.
Maybe entertainers, or something. But I found that piece of music because I don't know if you're aware, Ben, that a couple of weeks ago I put in a thing on Facebook saying theme tunes, suggestions for theme tunes for our various presenters. And the one that came up with for you was Joe 90. I don't know why. But I thought it was very good, and indeed, when you came onto the show last week, and probably this week, I haven't edited it yet, the Joe 90 theme backed you up on it. Alicia's as Barbie Girl.
Right.
And I was tempted to use the TFI Friday music for myself, actually, but I couldn't be bothered.
You couldn't be bothered?
No.
Did you finish this email?
Yes.
Right, he continues. We're on the final bit now.
Oh, we are, okay.
This is longer than a Chris Moyles radio marathon. I really thought this story. It had great, great production values and a great cast. Why, oh, why have we not seen the Zygons again in Doctor Who? He makes the same points as you.
Really? Did he write my lines for this podcast, Ben Jack?
Well, I think it's very interesting, though, because I did actually... Well, you sent me this email yesterday, and I read it yesterday. So as you were going through it...
No, I didn't actually go for it. I just got it, copied and pasted it into the email, and sent it off to you. I didn't actually read it. I thought, once I saw the words Terror of the Zygons, oh, don't want to read that. I haven't watched it yet.
I've had you going through your review. and you were picking out, you picked out so many of the same pictures.
It shows I was watching it, I suppose.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Anyway, why, dear Barry Took, why have we not seen the Zygons again in Doctor Who? It's been 36 years since this story. Is it really?
Yeah.
I was numb. Can you believe that? Let's hope we see them return. That's why I don't remember it being broadcast originally.
Probably will. I think that makes sense.
That was a little bit small.
Yeah.
He wants them to return, basically. Yeah. He then goes on.
I also enjoyed
the Children in Need Doctor Who bit. Very funny and cleverly done.
Yeah.
It was seeing the TARDIS. I don't know why I've gone in West Coast a bit. It's great seeing the TARDIS exterior inside.
Should have done this in an Australian accent, Ben.
Australian. I can just about do an Australian. Rory and Amy are great characters. A great TARDIS team, I think.
That's hello, going into...
I've gone into Welsh.
Dick Van Dyke.
And now I've gone right up north. No, no, look at me. I can go all around the country, I can. And they all sound the same. Rory and Amy are great characters. A great TARDIS team, I think. Matt Smith is wonderful, very alien and comforting at the same time.
Yep.
Looking forward to The Impossible Astronaut.
Oh, yes.
Oh yes. I have to say I enjoy Desperate Housewives 2.
Desperate Housewives 2?
Not the number two, the word T-double-O-2 as well. He's saying basically he enjoys Desperate Housewives.
Oh, as well. I got you. I love Desperate Housewives. I do. And it's coming back soon. And I'm not going to do a Desperate Housewives podcast, but I did specifically enjoy Desperate Housewives when John Barrowman was on it. I thought he played an absolutely brilliant baddie in that. He was fantastic.
This is what Robert says. He says,
oh, my God! Are we some sort of strange mentally attached twins, perhaps? My God, it's freaky.
Have you got any long lost siblings that you're not really not aware of? Because if they're long lost, that generally means you're not aware of them. I wonder if there's some.
Do you realise I'm now going to have to try to run and find the Twilight Zone music now?
I'll leave a place for it to play in now. It didn't work. I enjoyed Desperate Housewives 2, T-double-O, not the number. Listening to old podcasts of yours when you discussed John Barrowman's appearance last year, he was good in it.
Well, I've got that on my iPod, that last episode of that series. I love it. Brilliant.
I can honestly say I've watched the same amount of Desperate Housewives episodes as the age I was when this Doctor Who and the Zygons...
Ben, for once, Desperate Housewives, an American drama series, slight comedy... is absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It's for me the best at the moment drama series, a regular drama series to come out of that country. It's fantastic.
Right.
That's what I'm going to say in the matter.
I'll carry on. Well, that's enough for now. Oh, no, he's finishing. That might be my talk Desperate Housewives again. Well, that's enough for now, says Robert. You can pick and choose what you like from this. Oh, this is one of these, please don't read my name out at the end of the email. Bits in the letters that you've already read out on the radio. You can pick and choose what you'd like from this, as it's the episode you'll be discussing. Just thought I'd give some of what I saw with it. Keep up the good work. All the best, Robert. Robert, thank you very much. Fantastic.
Yes, and don't really be put off by our taking the mickey out of it being slightly long, because... It's best to have slightly long feedback than have none at all. And you have rather rescued our feedback section this week because we didn't have any. Oh, the clock's off. That's an hour.
Well, yeah, that means we've been talking for an hour.
Just on that bit of feedback.
Yeah. No. Seriously, I was really intrigued when I read this, as I said, first time to read what Robert had written about the episode. It's always really interesting to hear, you know, your views and then my views. And as I mentioned earlier, though, it's three-way this week because obviously we've got a whole review of the episode from Robert as well. So if you want to email in a review of next week's episode that we're going to be watching in the next 7 days and talking about,
we're just about to find out what it is.
We're going to have to do the randomizer.
Yeah,
my second. You can do the email addresses now.
Right, we have our sort of more common email address, which is 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. We have our old one, the word 20, the word Meg, the word feedback at hotmail.co.uk. Both of them work just as well as each other. And you can obviously send messages like Robert does via our group on Facebook or directly to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast friend on Facebook. So there's a few of us on Facebook. There's the group, there's the me, and there's...
Me.
Are you? You're on there as well, yeah.
I'm on there as well, yeah.
Has anybody asked you for friend requests yet, from as fandom goes? Possibly,
I
just don't realise.
I very rarely look, actually, and accept friends on Facebook, because I've got
don't
enough.
Feel offended. Alicia never does. So I know a few people have sent her friend requests, and she just bounces them straight away under strict, you know, instructions from us to actually only accept people she knows. So it's not, again, it's not any offence to anybody that if you get bounced. I won't bounce you. Because I generally, if someone sends me a friend request, I look on their profile. If it says Doctor Who, I generally accept them, unless they look really weird, or unless they're sort of like got their sort of pictures of them naked on something. It's obviously some one of those you get spam ones, don't you? Sort of.
I always accept them straight away.
No, I don't.
Yeah, the
just
naked
in case my
ones.
Wife looks in on my Facebook account.
Facebook's one of those weird things, isn't it? I can't ever understand why anyone would want to know if I'm having beans on toast for lunch or not, because that's all I ever write on it. No, what am I having for lunch
and
today?
And stuff about Manchester United, of course.
Ah, yeah.
Or how rubbish Berbatov used to be. But anyway.
It still is pretty bad, but, you know. Anyway, transgression.
A number between 1 and 5?
Oh, we'll go for 5 this week. Top of the shop.
Okay.
Actually, maybe we should go for 7 this week.
Oh, I don't believe it. Do you know, every time we do this, not every time, but it's something that comes up with a number, a random number that has something to do with something we've already blimmin' well done. Now, that came up with Love and Monsters, which is what Alicia eventually managed to talk about on our Andrew Cartmell episode. So try again. Or should I just do 5 again? Yeah, I'll do 5 again. And the random number generator has generated Fear Her, the David Tennant story, which is much maligned.
That's David Tennant.
Mm-hmm.
Series 2, is it?
It is.
Yeah, series 2, and that's the one of the Olympics, isn't it?
It is the one with the Olympics, yes, and the scribbly monster.
Oh, that one! Oh, I don't even need to watch that one again.
I mean, you don't really want to watch that one again
because it's only a 45-minute, so I'm quite happy to. To watch one like that. Oh, that's a good one. I like Fear Her. Yeah. Yeah, and the little girl in the screen.
Do you like it? No, I'm glad somebody does.
But didn't you?
Oh, overly keen. That's all right. Not. I don't dislike it as much as some other Doctor Who fans do. But it's all right. Nothing special. Bit silly at the end when the Doctor's running through with a blooming Olympic flame.
Oh, but you've got all our silliness. You've got to just... detach reality, because if you don't detach reality, then when watching sci-fi and Doctor Who and other bits and bobs like that, when you see a cardboard box blow up, there's meant to be a spaceship, you're looking at it, it's a cardboard box.
Right. I'll try and look at it in a positive way when I watch it between now and next week. And talking of next week, Ben, next week, do you remember many yawns ago, we did a podcast and I was parked in the co-op car park in Shanklin, and we did it, you did it over the phone, do you remember that? We're going to have to do it again next week because I'll be in Shanklin with the dogs having their hair done again. So
you live such an exciting life.
I know, so, which rather disappointed Kirby because Kirby Bartlett Sloan, who substituted for Alicia in the first half of the show, because it means he can't come on the show next week.
Unless
he records earlier. So we'll see what happens with that one. But I'm hoping to get Alicia back on next week. Of course, we've got episode 49 next week, which is one short of episode 50, the big 50.
What are we doing to celebrate episode 50?
You're coming over to the Isle of Wight to do the show live.
Am I hell? I'll tell you what, I'll meet you in Southampton and we'll record it.
Yeah. One day for certain. I must give a mention to our sponsors, whowon.co.uk, who I forgot to mention properly last week. They've got a website. It's quite funny because I think it was Leeson from Radio Rassel sent me a message on Twitter to say that he'd bought something from our online shop. So he thought that whowon.co.uk was our online shop. Bless him. of course, we have a donate button on our website, and as I alluded to before, it has helped us out immensely to move the show forward. So if you feel inclined to donate, please do so. From $2 upwards, you can go to our web page, which is the 20megabyte.whopodcast.podbean.com, no W's there, by the way, and you can click on the donate button and donate as little, well, minimum as $2, or as much as you like, and it will certainly help to enhance and keep our show going.
How much is a hovercraft fare from Portsmouth over to the Isle of Wight? Because if someone donates enough, I'll quite happily come over.
Yeah, I think it's about £14.
£14?
I think so. It's very expensive, this stretch of water, you know. It's more expensive than it is between France and Dover, I think. Or Calais and Dover, so it's quite an expensive experience getting off the island and getting back on again. So, yeah.
That's the thing with islands, it normally is.
Yeah, it's... Well, we're going to have to get off the island in a month's time. Less than a month now when we go on holiday to Blackpool. So I don't know how the blooming heck I'm supposed to do the show. We might have to do it over the phone again, whether Deb will allow me to do it while we're on holiday. I'll see at the time. It might be just a case of recording a show a day late or a day early over the phone or whatever. Like I say, because I'll be actually travelling up on that Monday, so we'll just see what happens. I'll sort of address it a bit nearer the time. I'd rather do it more updated, because I did when I was on holiday last year in Southport. We did actually record the show and upload it while I was up there. You know, I was in the hotel room uploading the show. So
I'm sure your wife was well pleased.
She was all right. She actually said, "Do you want to do the podcast now?" So me and Alicia and Isabella actually did the podcast in the room at Pontins. There's no signal there, so it was just a bit of a problem uploading it. But I think I actually uploaded it from McDonald's in Southport. So trials and tribulations.
That's
also, before I forget. We have our the iTunes feed, of course, as far as feedback goes, and you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/adam20mbpodcast. And let's get on Twitter, Ben. It's quite an interesting thing once you get around the idea of what it's all about.
I do have a Twitter.
Do you?
Yeah, I've
mentioned it.
Excuse me, very, very rarely used it.
Travelling the Vortex Daily News is out. That's obviously in connection with the Travelling the Vortex podcast, which is a really, really good podcast. That's about it, really. I thought this particular Twitter item would be quite good, but it's turning out to be a bit of a dead doodle.
That is rubbish. I don't bother with it.
Tim Drury says, "Morning all. So begins 2 weeks without Chris Moyles on the radio. Sadly, the alternatives are never as entertaining." Yes, they are. They're called the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, Tim.
Well, yeah, I'd agree with what he says, though, obviously, because apart from the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, the options aren't as good, because I no longer work on the radio. If I did...
Oh, yes, I forgot about that one. Yeah, good point.
Well, you know, I have tried Radio 1, but they've told me in no uncertain terms not to sully their doorstep anymore.
Sully their doorstep. Once again, we have to say goodbye. There's one little bit more to do, and that's Isabella's review of Space and Time, and then I think we better look at getting back together again in the radio stroke podcasting sense next week. What are we watching?
That might be an idea, yeah, as I'm becoming massively thin in my not eating for an hour state.
Oh dear. I've forgotten what we're watching that next week. What was it?
Next week, Fear Her.
That's that one. It was easy to forget, wasn't it? See you again next week, Ben.
Thanks very much, Adam. I've enjoyed it muchly, and indeed. I shall make your acquaintance again a week from hither.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So what did you just watch?
Doctor Who.
And what happened?
They got changed to some... They got both the same, then... There was one daughter and one Amy, and then they got changed, and then there was a TARDIS in there. And then Amy comes out, because then Doctor comes in, because he gone out, and then he fell out.
Thank you for that, Alicia. Oh, sorry, what's your name again?
Isabella.
That's the one. That's lovely. Thank you very much.
Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.